Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to all of you stuck in your car and elsewhere. It is Eric Erickson here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. Listen, apologies up front. I'm not even going to worry about giving out the phone number tonight because I have so much audio. There is so much news that has happened, just a ton. I would be doing you an actual disservice if I took your phone calls tonight because there's so much between the Comey and the Garland hearings. You should see the amount of audio that I have that I want to get through today, that it's all very relevant. There were two big hearings in Washington, D.C. today. There was the confirmation hearing for Neil Gorsuch, and there was the intelligence briefing with Admiral Mike Rogers and James Comey, the director of the FBI, before the House committee. And I want to start there. We'll get into Gorsuch, but I think the headlines for the next 24 hours are going to be driven by the Comey and Admiral Rogers situation. So I want to begin there. There is a lot of news and there is a lot of information that is going to make headlines. And what is making the most headlines today is an engagement that James Comey, the director of the FBI, had with Adam Schiff, a Democratic congressman from Florida. And this has been making just a ton of headlines this afternoon when this happened, and lots of speculation. And it is important for you to be able to see what the media is doing. And in order to do that, some of these clips are longer than I would like. Some of them are that they're more in depth than I think we need, but it is my intention today to put into context what was being said, because the context is relevant to how the media is reporting this stuff. In particular, this clip between Schiff and Comey that Comey refused. This is the way it's being reported on news networks. Comey did not deny that a wiretap request had been submitted to the FISA court. Now, for those of you who don't know what the FISA court is a secret court in Washington, D.C. Because of due process laws, Americans can't be spied upon on domestic soil without due process. And the way the government has set this up is the FISA court. And what the FISA court does is it gets requests for surveillance of American citizens. And it's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. That's what it is. So they want to get surveillance warrants against foreign spies inside the United States. And that is one of the big keys here. Is it is against foreign spies who are inside the United States. They may and may not or not be coming into contact with American citizens. That there may be ties to Americans, which is why they have to go through a court process. And in that court process, they present their case, their probable cause for why they need this wiretap or this surveillance. Because again, remember, intelligence agencies are not allowed to operate on domestic soil. So things have to go to the FBI, and then the FBI has to establish a case because there are probably Americans involved since they're here on American soil. There's an entire elaborate due process procedure, and it's got to go to a court in Washington. And so if they wanted to place a wiretap on people connected to the Trump campaign or people they believed might have ties to the Trump campaign and those people were operating on American soil, they would have to go to the FISA court. There would have to be a warrant for a wiretap. They couldn't just do it. And Comey's response to this congressman from Florida is making all the headlines, and it shouldn't. Now, I'm going to play you the clip. And again, you're going to listen to this, and I've put it in its entire context, and you're going to be scratching your head as to why it's a big deal. But I want to give you the context because it literally is the lead audio, the lead soundbite that is being played on news networks across the country. And they're giving you about a second and a half of it instead of the full context. So let me play you now. You're going to hear Adam Schiff, the congressman from Florida, and Comey's response.
Mr. Trump also asserted in that tweet that he was that the application or the president's order was turned down by a court. Was there any request made by the FBI or Justice Department to wiretap Donald Trump turned down by a court?
That's one of those subjects I can't comment on one way or another. Please don't interpret that in any way other than I just can't talk about anything that relates to the FISA process in an open setting.
Sounds like no big deal, huh? But what the media is playing is the very first, I mean, half second to a second of what Comey's saying. That's one thing I can't comment on one way or the other. And of course, the implication is, well, if it was a no, he would have said no. So it must be a yes because he didn't say no. No. Under the FISA Act, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978, that creates the FISA court, the FBI director, the head of the CIA, the intelligence agencies, they are not allowed to talk about anything related to the FISA court in a public setting. So if he was to say, no, we did not go to the FISA court, he would be talking about the FISA court in a public setting and would be in violation of the law. If he were to say, yes, we did go to the FISA court, he would be talking about the FISA court and would be breaking the law. See, it's not a you can't talk about the business you've taken before the FISA court. It is you can't talk about the FISA court. If you are the head of the FBI, you're not allowed to talk about the FISA court, what you did or did not do with the FISA court. Let me play you the audio again because it's very important that you get this in. That's why he says what he says at the end, not to interpret this one way or the other because he's just not allowed to talk about it.
Mr. Trump also asserted in that tweet that he was that the application or the president's order was turned down by a court. Was there any request made by the FBI or Justice Department to wiretap Donald Trump turned down by a court?
That's one of those subjects I can't comment on one way or another. Please don't interpret that in any way other than I just can't talk about anything that relates to the FISA process in an open setting.
See, he can't talk about anything related to the FISA process in an open setting. That is the only thing he's saying here. But if you were to turn on your evening news tonight, you're going to hear the intro of that clip, his question, and I can't comment on that one way or the other. And the clear implication being drawn by people or the media wants you to draw from that is that, well, if it was a no, he would have said no. So it must be a yes because he didn't say no. And they're leaving out the fact that James Comey cannot talk about the FISA process one way or the other in any way, shape, or form. He cannot do that in a public setting as the FBI director. It's really galling how they're trying to frame this. Now, there was a lot of information, some of it that you're not going to hear in the media today, including Devin Nunes, the chairman of the committee, asking about Russian interference in the election. This soundbite isn't getting picked up. I want to play it when we come back, and you'll ask yourself, why aren't they highlighting this one? It'll actually be pretty obvious why they're not. If you're just tuning in, let me go back and set this up for you so you understand what's happening tonight. It is Eric Erickson here on WSB. There were two big hearings in Washington today, which is why I'm actually not even giving out the phone number tonight. I've got so much audio I want to get through and set this for you and help you get a bigger picture of what's going on here. The two hearings, the Comey, Mike Rogers hearing on the House side and the Neil Gorsuch confirmation hearing on the Senate side. And you're hearing selectively, I flipped through TV station day, listening to radio shows, looking around the web, and the media is really trying to overly dramatize the Comey hearing. They're largely ignoring the Garland hearing, or I'm sorry, the Gorsuch hearing. In fact, only Fox News switched to the Gorsuch hearings when it began. Everybody else stayed with the Intelligence Committee or the House Oversight Committee hearing. And they're selectively quoting from it. One of the things you're not going to hear is this exchange between Devin Nunes and Admiral Mike Rogers, the director of the National Security Agency, and James Comey, the FBI head. And in fact, when I looked on some left-wing sites, they're highlighting the Mike Rogers portion where he says, well, we're the foreign side of stuff. We're not the best ones to ask. And they ignore the fact that they did ask the FBI director, who confirms what Admiral Rogers said. Listen to this exchange. This is important here. You're going to hear Devin Nunes, the chairman of the committee, and then Mike Rogers and James Comey.
Admiral Rogers, I first want to go to you. On January 6th, 2017, the intelligence community assessment assessing Russian activities and intentions in recent U.S. elections stated that the types of systems Russian actors targeted or compromised were not involved in vote tallying. So my question as of today, Admiral Rogers, do you have any evidence that Russia cyber actors changed vote tallies in the state of Michigan?
No, I do not. But I would highlight we're a foreign intelligence organization, not a domestic intelligence organization. So it would be fair to say we are probably not the best organization to provide a more complete answer.
Now, that's what the left is highlighting, and they're leaving out Comey at the end. But listen to the rest of this exchange.
How about the state of Pennsylvania?
No, sir.
The state of Wisconsin?
No, sir.
State of Florida?
No, sir.
The state of North Carolina?
No, sir.
The state of Ohio?
No, sir.
So you have no intelligence that suggests or evidence that suggests any votes were changed?
I have nothing generated by the National Security Agency, sir.
Director Comey, do you have any evidence at the FBI that any votes were changed in the states that I mentioned to Admiral Rogers?
No.
Thank you.
No. He asked the FBI as well. So the foreign side and the domestic side says no. You're not going to get that in the media. I got a lot more audio when we come back. It is Eric Erickson here on WSB that you just so happen to be listening to here about 39 after the hour. If you're just tuning in, before I get into the Gorsuch confirmation hearing today, the real big story is the FBI hearing that was held in the House. FBI National Security Agency, Admiral Mike Rogers from the NSA and James Comey from the FBI were there to talk about what did or did not happen with an investigation into Donald Trump. Got a lot of audio here that I want to play for you because I think it is very useful for you to get the setup of what's going on. In the first half hour, I really set up the context of how the media is trying to take some of this out of context, but I also think that it is worth going into some of what they did say. You'll remember that James Clapper, the former National Intelligence Director, said there really is no evidence of collaboration. Chris Stewart, Republican congressman, asked about that. I want to play you that exchange now.
Mr. Clapper, the former DNI, and we all know who he is. This is someone who should know. I want to read what he said just a few weeks ago. But Mr. Clapper then went on to say that to his knowledge, there was no evidence of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. We did not conclude any evidence in our report. And when I say our report, that is the NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, any reflection of collusion between the members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that in our report. Was Mr. Clapper wrong when he said that?
I think he's right about characterizing the report, which you all have read.
That he was right with the report. Now, you will note the caveat implied by what Comey says, that he was right with regards to the report. There is nothing in any report to suggest there was any collaboration. Comey did, however, note that there is an ongoing FBI investigation. We'll get to that in a minute, but I want to play the rest of this exchange between Chris Stewart and James Comey, Admiral Rogers as well. This is a key point here, and I'm going to go on and tell you what they say because I want you to hear it in their words, again, in the full context. That's why some of these clips are long, so you get the full context. Nobody can accuse me of cherry-picking. The Russians did not think Donald Trump was going to win the election. They did not believe he was going to win the election. Based on our intelligence, they thought he was going to lose. They just didn't like Hillary Clinton. Listen to this exchange.
Hey, Mr. Comey, you indicated as of August, September. Do you believe they ever came to a conclusion that, you know what, Mr. Trump's going to win?
No, the assessment of the intelligence community was that early on, they thought he might have a shot. And so they wanted to mess with our election, hurt our country in general. That's always the baseline. They hated her, Secretary Clinton, wanted to harm her and thought it might have a chance to help Mr. Trump. And then later concluded that Mr. Trump, it was hopeless, and they would focus then on just trying to undermine Secretary Clinton, especially with the European allies.
Got that. So up until summer and through the fall, they believed that Secretary Clinton would win. Is that true?
Yeah, I think the assessment was late in the summer, they concluded, based on the polling I think a lot of people were reading, that Mr. Trump didn't have a chance, and they shifted to just focusing on just trying to undermine her.
So you got that? And you heard in there Admiral Rogers saying agreed with Comey. They didn't think Donald Trump was going to win any more than anybody else thought Donald Trump was going to win. They were looking at the polling too. They just wanted to cause trouble for Hillary Clinton. They wanted to mess with Hillary Clinton, who they did not like. That had more to do with it. Now, Comey did go on to say that Putin does have a bias toward business leaders in charge of governments because of their transactional nature. And so he would have liked Donald Trump to be president, but he did not think Donald Trump was going to be president. And the Russians just wanted to mess with Hillary Clinton. They also said that the Russians were not the ones who directly engaged WikiLeaks, that they used third parties to do it, but the FBI and the NSA are fairly certain that they were involved with it. Important points. Still more points coming. What else do I want to play for? Yes, I want to play for you the Jim Hines audio, because you do need this context for what's going on, and that is that you and I are thinking this investigation has been going on for 10 months. And according to Comey, that's actually not a long time. This is Jim Hines, a Democrat from Connecticut.
Should there be any possible collusion? We've had a number of statements very early in the investigation that there was no evidence of collusion. This is still very early in our investigation. Is it fair to say that you're still relatively early in your investigation?
It's hard to say because I don't know how much longer it will take, but we've been doing this. This investigation began in late July. So for a counterintelligence investigation, that's a fairly short period of time.
So you use the word coordination, which to me suggests that you are, in fact, investigating whether there was coordination between U.S. persons and the Russians. Is it fair for me to assume that we shouldn't simply dismiss the possibility that there was coordination or collusion between the Russian efforts and U.S. persons as an investigatory body?
All I can tell you is what we're investigating, which includes whether there was any coordination between people associated with the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Now, notice the damage control in the questions. Himes and the Democrats have been convinced that they had a gotcha moment with Trump, that there was evidence. And here comes James Comey to say, we've been at this for 10 months and we still don't have any evidence. We're looking into it, but we don't have any after 10 months of looking. And that's why Himes says, but this is in terms of an FBI investigation, relatively short. Well, yeah, it is. But after 10 months, there's no evidence. And that gives rise to the issue of leaks, the final soundbite on the leaks when we come back. Okay, before we get to the Gorsuch hearing, I want to play this last clip from the Comey investigation today, or the Comey hearing today, and this is an exchange with Peter King, where Peter King was asking, you'll hear at the beginning of this clip, if Comey can confirm an investigation that happened between someone else and Reince Priebus, a conversation Comey wasn't privy to, but then he goes on to talk about the leaks in general. Listen to this.
I can't, Mr. King, but I can agree with your general premise. Leaks have always been a problem. I read over the weekend something from George Washington and Abraham Lincoln complaining about them. But I do think in the last 6 weeks, couple of months, there's been at least apparently a lot of conversation about classified matters that's ending up in the media. Now, a lot of it is just dead wrong, which is one of the challenges because we don't correct it. But it does strike me there's been a lot of people talking, or at least reporters saying people are talking to them in ways that have struck me as unusually active.
Yes, I'm glad he admits that, and kudos to Peter King asking the question. But notice he said a lot of the information you're reading about in the papers is dead wrong, but they, as a policy, they don't comment on it to correct this stuff. And largely, a friend of mine says the reason they don't is because in some cases in the past, they've had people attempt to bait them by saying the FBI is doing X, Y, and Z, and if the FBI were to come out and say, no, we're not, well then, I mean, obviously people know, oh, they're not on to the scam. So they don't do that. But he says a lot of this is wrong. Now, take that a lot of it is wrong, and his confirmation that there is no evidence of collaboration, and you start to see the Democrats' case against Donald Trump falling apart. There is a there. The Russians wanted to influence the American election. But there doesn't appear to be a there. When it comes to the Trump campaign working with the Russians, that should be the key takeaway from today's hearing. When we come back, we'll get into the Neil Gorsuch hearing before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. You finally made it to the second hour where we get into Neil Gorsuch, and I lied. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here on WSB. We are going to get into Neil Gorsuch's confirmation hearing this hour, but there was actually a piece of audio that I didn't have time to play last hour and totally forgot about it, but it's worth you hearing. It involves Sally Yates from Georgia, who was the acting U.S. Attorney General until she quit in protest of the Trump immigration order. Trey Gowdy from South Carolina, who was a prosecutor, asks prosecutorial sorts of questions, guides people where he wants them to go. He's pretty convinced that there was leaking going on by the Democrats. And if you were here in the last hour, I played the clip by James Comey where he said that a lot of the information coming out of the media about classified information is not true, but that there are an abundance of leaks and it is highly unusual and it's concerning to him. Gowdy decided to try to put his finger on who the leakers were and listen to this exchange because the Democrats are livid about it. In fact, someone at USA Today rushed out and said, Trey Gowdy accuses the Obama administration of the leaks with no evidence. Listen to this exchange.
Do you know whether Director Clapper knew the name of the U.S. citizen that appeared in the New York Times and Washington Post?
I can't say in this forum because, again, I don't want to confirm that there was classified information in the news.
Would he have access to an unmasked name?
In some circumstances, sure. He was the Director of National Intelligence, but I'm not talking about the particular.
Would Director Brennan have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
In some circumstances, yes.
Would National Security Advisor Susan Rice have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
I think in general, and any other National Security Advisor would, I think, as a matter of their ordinary course of their business.
Would former White House Advisor Ben Rhodes have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
I don't know the answer to that.
Would former Attorney General Loretta Lynch have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
In general, yes, as would any Attorney General.
So that would also include acting AG Sally Yates?
Same answer.
Did you brief President Obama on, I'll just ask you. Did you brief President Obama on any calls involving Michael Flynn?
I'm not going to get into either that particular case, that matter, or any conversations I had with the president. So I can't answer that.
Now, what you need to know is that the unmasking that he's talking about is disseminating the identities of Americans who were kind of picked up in the elections investigation. So I think Gowdy is trying to put his finger on who's doing the leaking. And it's pretty clear that there were people in the Obama administration who would have had access to that information. And that's what he's getting at. That was the exchange, and he built on that towards the end. I don't have his closing statement, but I think Gowdy is increasingly convinced that it was people, and I don't think there's any doubt, I don't think anybody thinks otherwise, that there were people in the Obama administration who were leaking. Now, I want to step out, check traffic, and then when we come back, we'll get into the Gorsuch hearing, because the Democrats, I don't even have Gorsuch audio to play for you. I've just got Democrats and one Mike Lee, but the Democrats have lost their minds and betrayed just how little regard they have for the Constitution in their statements today. Okay, let's shift gears here, because it was striking to hear the Democrats today actually go on the warpath about originalism. Never mind, Elena Kagan herself has said that it is the duty of the judges to find the original intent of the framers of the Constitution. I've got that audio for you. But first, I want to deal with this by Pat Leahy, because Pat Leahy is saying something that is not true about the confirmation hearing.
Today marks the first time the Senate Judiciary Committee has met publicly to take action on the Supreme Court vacancy that resulted from Justice Scalia's death 13 months ago. Because just hours after we learned of Justice Scalia's sudden passing, the Republican Majority Leader declared that the Senate would not provide any process to any nominee selected by President Obama, despite the president having nearly a year left in his term. This was an extraordinary blockade. It was totally unprecedented in our country's whole history.
You got that? Totally unprecedented in our country's whole history. And then Ken Boyer, who is a Democrat, lost his mind on CNN over the same issue. Listen to this.
This was a seat that Republicans said they were not even going to have a hearing, not even a hearing for Merrick Garland. And you had people like Ted Cruz and John McCain who said they were going to obstruct Hillary Clinton. If she were to win the election, they were going to obstruct any person who she nominated as a Supreme Court justice. So I think the idea that Democrats should take this person seriously is outrageous. I don't think this person, I don't think that Neil Gorsuch, I don't care how fair he is or how honest he is, how good a person he is, he does not deserve to be in the seat. He should not even be considered for the seat.
Doesn't matter how good he is, how fair he is, how honest he is, how good a person he is, he doesn't deserve the seat. It's Merrick Garland's seat. Now, never mind, there's a constitutional process, and he never made it through the confirmation process. Well, the Republicans blocked him. Well, you know, the Constitution says the president can't put anyone on the court without the advice and consent of the Senate, and the Senate advised the president not to nominate Garland, and he did anyway. So the fact that the Democrats are hanging on to this, but this is the key point here. I want to read this to you from my good friend Dan McLaughlin. He was at Red State with me for years and moved over to National Review last year. Let me read this. Neil Gorsuch is a careful judge, a lively writer, and a brilliant legal scholar. He's received the highest possible rating from the left-leaning American Bar Association and the support of a number of liberals who have worked with him over the years. There's nothing bad you can say about Gorsuch as a Supreme Court nominee. Nothing, that is, except that Gorsuch is, one, a conservative who, two, was nominated by Donald Trump, two, three, fill the same seat as Merrick Garland, the Obama nominee, to whom Republicans refuse to give a vote or even a hearing. Arch-partisan Democrats regard the seat vacated by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia as stolen and Trump's election as illegitimate, and they think these are reasons enough to vote against any Trump nominee to replace Scalia. As a result, the Gorsuch nomination will largely be a proxy fight over the legitimacy of the Senate's rejection of the Garland nomination. And so what Dan does is he goes through the history of election year appointments to the Supreme Court. And guess what? Let me play you the Leahy audio again.
Today marks the first time the Senate Judiciary Committee has met publicly to take action on the Supreme Court vacancy that resulted from Justice Scalia's death 13 months ago. Because just hours after we learned of Justice Scalia's sudden passing, the Republican Majority Leader declared that the Senate would not provide any process to any nominee selected by President Obama, despite the president having nearly a year left in his term. This was an extraordinary blockade. It was totally unprecedented in our country's whole history.
That's not true. In fact, according to Dan McLaughlin, who did the research and lays it out historically, the Scalia vacancy was the seventh time that the Senate has held a Supreme Court vacancy open rather than confirm an election year nominee. Besides Obama, there was John Tyler, Rutherford B. Hayes, John Quincy Adams, Millard Fillmore, James Buchanan, and Lyndon Johnson. And then, in fact, in Andrew Johnson's situation, the Republican Congress eliminated Supreme Court seats as they became vacant, instead of allowing Johnson to appoint people for those seats. And then when he left the White House, remember they tried to impeach him, then they restored the Supreme Court to 9 seats. So don't believe this. It's never been done before. It's been done 7 times, and then an 8th time even more violently with Andrew Johnson. It was kind of off the wall. We're at Lenox, and there were no parking spots. I couldn't find a parking spot and got fed up, so we decided we were going to do valet. And so we're standing outside. We took the kids to the Cheesecake Factory, which is where they want me to take them every time we come into the city. We're standing out waiting for a car, and all of a sudden here, it's Eric Erickson! And I assumed it was a friend of mine when they said that, and looked up and saw these 4 ladies coming towards me, and I didn't recognize a single one of them. And one of the ladies says, she's one of your biggest fans. So, hi, I assume you're listening today, and thank you. It was nice to meet you, but I'm terrible with remembering names. And no, apparently she didn't give, my kids say she didn't give me her name. So I don't feel bad now, but I can't recall that she did, but she's very nice. We got a picture, put the kids in the picture, and the kids were totally freaked out. The 8-year-old called his mom, apparently, when I was gone to pick up supper later that night, and said it was just like the paparazzi. Oh, mercy. But hey, at least I know some of you are listening to me on this ProGrifter service. It is pretty cool. So when we come back, more on the Merrick Garland nomination. Merrick Garland, listen to me. The Neil Gorsuch situation. Yes, I'm kind of trolling, I guess, the Democrats with that. We'll be back. Okay, now we get into the insanity of the Democrats. I played you the Pat Leahy meltdown. Neil Gorsuch, his confirmation hearing began today. The Republicans, by the way, say they're going to confirm him before their Easter recess. The Easter recess is scheduled for April 10th. He was nominated January 31st. This will be one of the fastest Supreme Court confirmation hearings in the last decade and a half. It'll be faster than Kagan. It'll actually be faster than Antonin Scalia's nomination back in the 80s. So Republicans are moving this thing along. And the main reason they want to move this thing along is because they've got a series of controversial cases coming up in the April term for the Supreme Court after Easter. And they want to make sure conservatives there so they don't get decided 4-4 and go the wrong way. So I want to play you Dianne Feinstein, and this just blew my mind when I heard it. Listen to this and the implications of this.
Judge Gorsuch has not had occasion to rule directly on a case involving Roe. However, his writings do raise questions. Specifically, he wrote that he believes there are no exceptions to the principle that, quote, the intentional taking of a human life by private persons is always wrong, end quote.
Okay, you got that? He says there are no exceptions to the idea that the intentional taking of human life by private persons is always wrong. Can you think of a situation where the intentional taking of a human life by a private person, not the state, not a capital punishment, but by another person, can you think of a situation where it is right? See, his quote actually comes from a book he wrote, a well-researched, highly regarded book, even by liberal circles, highly regarded book on euthanasia. And that he says he thinks that the default presumption must be for life. That's where they're getting this from. But people are reading this as a statement saying he would go against Roe versus Wade, which Dianne Feinstein calls it a super precedent. I don't know what a super precedent is versus a precedent, but she says it's a super precedent. Isn't this an acknowledgement, if she believes this based on the statement, that a child in utero is a person? I mean, isn't that what she's implying here? A child in utero? Because Democrats often say that. I mean, did you see the Tucker Carlson interview with the Planned Parenthood woman? That she refused to say whether or not a child in utero with a heartbeat who could survive outside the womb but was not outside the womb yet, whether or not it was a person she didn't want to say and bias people. She couldn't answer the question. She refused to answer the question. The answer is yes, it is a human being. In fact, Tucker said the clump of cells with a heartbeat, is that a human in some form? And she wouldn't say that either. And here's Dianne Feinstein. Oh, but it gets better. Listen to this bit of Dianne Feinstein where she condemns originalism.
Fitch has also stated that he believes judges should look to the original public meaning of the Constitution when they decide what a provision of the Constitution means. This is personal, but I find this originalist judicial philosophy to be really troubling. In essence, it means that judges and courts should evaluate our constitutional rights and privileges as they were understood in 1789. However, to do so would not only ignore the intent of the framers, that the Constitution would be a framework on which to build, but it severely limits the genius of what our Constitution upholds. I firmly believe the American Constitution is a living document intended to evolve as our country evolves. In 1789, the population of the United States was under 4 million. Today, we're 325 million and growing. At the time of our founding, African Americans were enslaved. It was not so long after women had been burned at the stake for witchcraft. And the idea of an automobile, let alone the internet, was unfathomable.
Okay, first of all, she's trying to go after the Salem witch trials, which were in the late 1600s, 100 years before the Constitution, really? And also, I would note that we amended the Constitution on slavery. It was amended. She doesn't think you should have to amend the Constitution. Why did the founders of the document, the drafters of the document, include a provision to amend it if it was a living, breathing document? Why did they immediately upon passage of the Constitution, once it was ratified, immediately in the very first Congress author the Bill of Rights, which was actually a series of 14, I believe, amendments, 10 of which got passed, the 11th of which got passed in when I was in high school, 1996, 97. Why do you think they, if it was a living, breathing document, that could change? Absolutely absurd. I just saw a listener on Twitter asking donut shop that I took the kids to. It's the Revolutionary Donuts on, near Edgewood Avenue. It's in Hipsterville area, you know, on the south side of the city, down past Oakland Cemetery. I've been wanting to go there for a while. Follow them on Instagram. They're headquartered in Decatur, but they got a shop now over there. Really good donuts. The kids were fans, and I've got two picky eaters. So if you want a good donut shop, there you go. What's the one up on the north side of the city? Reagan, I can't remember. But we have several good donut shops now. This one's really good. Okay, now one more audio clip before I move on. Al Franken on this whole living Constitution thing. Listen to Al Franken. This is the dumbest clip you're going to hear this week, probably.
Now, Justice Scalia was a man of great conviction, and it should be said, a man of great humor. But Justice Scalia embraced a rigid view of our Constitution, a view blind to the equal dignity of LGBT people and hostile to women's reproductive rights, and a view that often refused to acknowledge the lingering animus in laws and policies that perpetuate the racial divide. Judge Gorsuch, while no one can dispute that the late Judge Scalia's love of the Constitution, the document he revered, looks very different from the one that I have sworn to support and defend.
How is that possible? It's the same document. It hasn't been amended since 96. How is it possible that his the document that Al Franken swore to. See, this is their little wiggle room on this living, breathing document. Scalia believes you got to amend it to change it, which is the common sense view, and liberals believe it is the you got to, it's living, breathing, and changes at whim, which is what they do when they want to delegitimize something that doesn't work in their favor. Just asinine that they, I mean, this whole idea that Scalia swore to uphold, protect, defend something different, just absolutely nonsensical. All right, the last bit of audio I want to play for you today, Mike Lee, senator from Utah, friend of mine, he thankfully was able to make some sense about this. So I played you Dianne Feinstein. She doesn't like originalism. She doesn't like the idea that we should have to amend the Constitution. She believes it's a living, breathing document, that we shouldn't have to go back and determine the intent of the founders. Mike Lee remembers Elena Kagan's confirmation hearing under Barack Obama. Listen to this.
Justice Elena Kagan, before she was Justice Kagan, when she was standing before this committee in the second day of her confirmation hearings, said, and I quote, referring to the Founding Fathers and the need to figure out what the Founding Fathers understood about particular words, about how those particular words were used by the founding generation, said sometimes they laid down very specific rules, sometimes they laid down broad principles. Either way, we apply what they tried to do. In that way, we are all originalists. That was on June 29th, 2010, before this committee.
And Dianne Feinstein sat on that committee at that time and would have heard the gist. The Democrats, they love the Constitution when it works for them. They think it's illegitimate and have to change it through the courts when they don't. That's the problem with Neil Gorsuch. Now, tomorrow, the confirmation hearing goes on, as does the Comey stuff, and I'll probably take the Gorsuch stuff first tomorrow night. He's going to start really answering a lot of questions tomorrow, and want to give you that. Sonny Perdue's hearing also gears up, and there is an issue before the legislature. I ran out the clock tonight and didn't get a chance to get to it, but the legislature wants to make sure there is a provision exempting Christian organizations who do adoptions and get state money from having to adopt in situations that discredit their faith. Really what it's getting towards is gay adoption. Catholic charities, for example, do not allow gay adoption because of their faith issues. And the governor has now come out against giving faith-based groups that exemption because, yet again, the Hollywood and gay rights lobbies are opposed to it, and he's scared of being disliked. And we'll get into that information tomorrow as well. Really appalling that the Republicans in the state legislature are opposed to allowing Christian charities to honor their faith and still do adoptions in Georgia. I thought they supported life. Why can't Christians honor their faith and help place kids in homes? That should offend you. That's what should offend you. We'll get into that tomorrow night as well. You guys have a good night and see y'all tomorrow.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.